Old Folks' Christmas by Reen Lardner. Tom and Grace Carter sat in their living room on Christmas Eve, sometimes talking, sometimes pretending to read, and all the time thinking things they didn't want to think. Their two children, Junior, age 19, and Grace, 2 years younger, had come home that day from their schools for the Christmas vacation. Junior was in his first year at the university, and Grace attending a boarding school that would fit her for college. I won't call them Grace and Junior anymore, though that is the way they had been christened. Junior had changed his name to Ted, and Grace was now Caroline, and thus they insisted on being addressed, even by their parents. This was one of the things Tom and Grace, the elder, were thinking of as they sat in their living room Christmas Eve. Other university freshmen who had lived here had returned on the 21st, the day when the vacation was supposed to begin. Ted had telegraphed that he would be 3 days late, owing to a special examination, which, if he passed it, would lighten the terrific burden of the next term. He had arrived at home looking so pale, heavy-eyed, and shaky, that his mother doubted the wisdom of the concentrated mental effort, while his father secretly hoped the stuff had been non-poisonous and would not have lasting effects. Caroline, too, had been behind schedule, explaining that her laundry had gone astray, and she had not dared trust others to trace it for her. Grace and Tom had attempted, with fair success, to conceal their disappointment over this delayed homecoming, and had continued with their preparations for a Christmas that would thrill their children and, consequently, themselves. They had bought an imposing lot of presents, costing twice or three times as much as had been Tom's father's annual income when Tom was Ted's age, or Tom's own income a year ago, before General Motors' acceptance of his new weatherproof paint had enabled him to buy the suburban home and luxuries such as his own parents and Grace's had never dreamed of, and to give Ted and Caroline advantages that he and Grace had perforce gone without. Behind the closed door of the music room was the elaborately decked tree. The piano and piano bench and the floor around the tree were covered with beribboned packages of all sizes, shapes, and weights. One of them addressed to Tom, another to Grace, a few to the servants, and the rest to Ted and Caroline. A huge box contained a sealskin coat for Caroline, a coat that had cost as much as the Carters had formerly paid a year for rent. Even more expensive was a set of jewelry consisting of an opal brooch, a bracelet of opals and gold filigree, and an opal ring surrounded by diamonds. Grace had always preferred opals to any other stone, but now that she could afford them, some inhibition prevented her from buying them for herself. She could enjoy them much more, adorning her pretty daughter. There were boxes of silk stockings, lingerie, gloves, and handkerchiefs, and for Ted, a $300 watch, a deluxe edition of Balzac, an expensive bag of shiny, new steel-shafted golf clubs, and the last word in portable phonographs. But the big surprise for the boy was locked in the garage, a black Gorham sedan, a model more up-to-date and better-looking than Tom's own year-old car that stood beside it. Ted could use it during the vacation if the mild weather continued, and could look forward to driving it around home next spring and summer, there being a rule at the university forbidding undergraduates the possession or use of private automobiles. Every year for 16 years, since Ted was 3 and Caroline 1, it had been the Christmas Eve custom of the Carters to hang up their children's stockings and fill them with inexpensive toys. Tom and Grace had thought it would be fun to continue the custom this year. The contents of the stockings, a mechanical Negro dancing doll, music boxes, a kitten that meowed when you pressed a spot on her back, etc., would make the kids laugh. And one of Grace's first pronouncements to her returned offspring was that they must go to bed early so Santa Claus would not be frightened away. But it seemed they couldn't promise to make it so terribly early. They both had long-standing dates in town. Caroline was going to dinner and a play with Beatrice Murdoch and Beatrice's 19-year-old brother, Paul. The latter would call for her in his car at 6:30. Ted had accepted an invitation to see the hockey match with two classmates, Herb Castle and Bernard King. He wanted to take his father's Gorham, but Tom told him untruthfully that the foot brake was not working. Ted must be kept out of the garage till tomorrow morning. Ted and Caroline had taken naps in the afternoon and gone off together in Paul Murdoch's stylish roadster, giving their word that they would be back by midnight or a little later, and that tomorrow night they would stay home. And now their mother and father were sitting up for them because the stockings could not be filled and hung till they were safely in bed, and also because trying to go to sleep is a painful and hopeless business when you're kind of jumpy. "What time is it?" asked Grace, looking up from the third page of a book that she had begun to read soon after dinner. 2:30, said her husband. He had answered the same question every 15 or 20 minutes since midnight. "You don't suppose anything could have happened?" said Grace. "We'd have heard if there had," said Tom. "It isn't likely, of course," said Grace. "But they might have had an accident someplace where nobody was there to report it or telephone or anything. We don't know what kind of driver the Murdoch boy is." "He's Ted's age. Boys that age may be inclined to drive too fast, but they drive pretty well."
"How do you know?"
"Well, I've watched some of them drive."
"Yes, but not all of them."
"Well, I doubt whether anybody in the world has seen every 19-year-old boy drive."
"Boys these days seem so kind of, irresponsible."
"Oh, don't worry. They probably met some of their young friends and stopped for a bite to eat or something."
Tom got up and walked to the window with studied carelessness.
"Oh, it's pretty night," he said. "You can see every star in the sky."
But he wasn't looking at the stars.
He was looking down the road for headlights. There were none in sight. And after a few moments, he returned to his chair.
"What time is it?" asked Grace.
22 of," he said.
"Of what?"
"Of 3. Your watch must have stopped. Nearly an hour ago, you told me it was 2:30.
My watch is all right. You probably dozed off."
"I haven't closed my eyes."
"Well, it's time you did. Why don't you go to bed?"
"Why don't you?"
"I'm not sleepy."
"Neither am I."
"But honestly, Tom, it's silly for you to stay up. I'm just doing it so I can fix the stockings, and because I feel so wakeful. But there's no use of your losing your sleep."
"I couldn't sleep a wink till they're home."
"That's foolishness. There's nothing to worry about. They're just having a good time. You were young once yourself."
"That's just it. When I was young, I was young."
He picked up his paper and tried to get interested in the shipping news.
"What time is it?" asked Grace.
3:05. "Maybe they're staying at the Murdochs all night. They'd have let us know."
"They were afraid to wake us up, telephoning."
At 3:20, a car stopped at the front gate.
"There they are! I told you there was nothing to worry about."
Tom went to the window. He could just discern the outlines of the Murdoch boys' roadster, whose lighting system seemed to have broken down.
"He hasn't any lights," said Tom.
"Maybe I'd better go out and see if I can fix them."
"No, don't," said Grace sharply. "He can fix them himself. He's just saving them while he stands still."
"Why don't they come in?"
"They're probably making plans."
"They can make them in here. I'll go out and tell them we're still up."
"No, don't,"
said Grace as before, and Tom obediently remained at the window. It was nearly 4 when the car lights flashed on and the car drove away. Caroline walked into the house and stared dazedly at her parents.
"Heavens, what are you doing up?"
Tom was about to say something, but Grace forestalled him.
"We were talking over old Christmases," she said. "Is it very late?"
"I haven't any idea," said Caroline.
"Where is Ted?"
"Isn't he home? I haven't seen him since we dropped him at the hockey place."
"Well,
"You go right to bed," said her mother. "You must be worn out." "I am, kind of. We danced after the play. What time is breakfast?"
8 o'clock.
"Oh, mother, can't you make it 9?
"I guess so. You used to want to get up early on Christmas."
"I know, but who brought you home?" asked Tom.
"Why, Paul Murdoch
and Beatrice."
"You look rumpled."
"They made me sit in the rumple seat." She laughed at her own joke, said good night, and went upstairs. She had not come even within handshaking distance of her father and mother.
"The Murdochs," said Tom, "must have great manners, making their guest ride in that uncomfortable seat."
Grace was silent.
"You go to bed, too," said Tom. "I'll wait for Ted."
"You couldn't fix the stockings."
"I won't try. We'll have time for that in the morning. I mean, later in the morning."
"I'm not going to bed until you do," said Grace.
"All right, we'll both go. Ted ought not to be long now. I suppose his friends will bring him home. We'll hear him when he comes in."
There was no chance not to hear him when, at 6:10, he came in. He had done his Christmas shopping late and brought home a package.